This is Larry Greer speaking on behalf of the Rossi Living Museum. I'm here with Jeff and Bev Sayre on October 23rd, 2003. Now, Jeff, I'll just ask you a few questions, and the first one would be if you'd tell us when you were born.
When was I born?
June 12th, 1960.
And when did you first come to the area? You were born here, I assume.
No, born in St. John.
Okay.
Came here in 18.
You were two years old.
Yeah, 2 years old.
In 1918.
Yeah, although I was here in the summer in Rossi Park. I'll correct that then. I was in Rossi from day one, literally, in the summer. Then in 18, my father built the present house that's there now, and we moved from St. John. She lived in St. John in the winter. Moved out in 1918.
And stayed year-round.
Stayed year-round.
Right, okay, yeah. So basically, then it would be safe to say that you lived in Rossi all your life.
Pretty well all my life, except a couple of winters, that was all.
So can you tell us a little bit about your family?
Which family?
My family that I grew up in.
Yes.
Yeah. My father and my mother. And there was two of us were males and two females. So I had a brother and two sisters. I remember when we lived in Rossi Park, and I remember when we moved into—that's a long time ago too—into the house in Rossi. And of course, I was there, lived in that house till this last war, and then I went in the war and got married and never lived there again, except to visit. How far should we go?
Well, that's. I know your father was a somewhat well-known person in Rossi as well.
Yes, he was. He was a Rossi resident for
chairman
of the board. They didn't call him mayor in those days; they called him chairman. So he was a chairman of the board of Rossi, which in effect was mayor of Rossi for several years. Mr. Fred Crosby took over after my father. I gave it up.
Now, would your dad have been the first chairman or mayor of Rossi?
Yes.
Yeah, he was the first
mayor
of the incorporated village of Rossi.
What year was Rossi incorporated? Ooh. Would it have been 24?
Before that, because you got the fire truck at 23.
I think.
Didn't you? The old fire truck came to 23.
It's 24, I think. It's a 1924 Model T.
24
so.
Model T.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it would have been before that.
Yes, because we were in our house.
I got a book upstairs, so you just go on to the next question. Well, I'll have one.
In 24, we were in our... I was in the house, you know, that's existing now. And I can remember the day... that the Model T arrived at our front door from St. John because it was shipped down from Woodstock, Ontario, in a freight car. And my grandfather's handyman drove it out to our house and came in and had a cup of tea to warm up because it was cold outdoors.
It would have been like October.
Yeah, and there was no windshield, of course, on the fire truck.
Yeah.
He was wide open to the winds. Then the truck went to... Mr. Fred, we had no place to keep it, so it went up to Fred Crosby's garage. And, of course, that night our house was on fire, so that was the first house fire, first fire of the first fire truck in Rossi, New Brunswick. So we had the honor of, and I can well remember that because something blew the furnace door open. And in those days, they used to pile all the waste paper wanted into a cardboard box next to the furnace and burn it when they were starting the furnace up. Well, something blew the door open on the furnace, caught fire to this box, which in turn caught fire to the wooden side of the coal shed. That in turn boiled the water in the pipes along the ceiling, and the hammering of that boiling water is what woke us up.
Wow.
Fortunately, the ceiling was plastered, so it didn't spread up through the house. So they got it out with the Model T. That was the first fire.
That was his first fire on its first day in the village.
But I originally spent a couple of years at least in Rossi Park in the summer because our family was brought up in St. John. Then I grew up in Rossi from then on.
So maybe you could tell us a little bit about your present family. You what year you were married?
I have to bring my wife.
We'll ask the missus that one, okay.
Those numbers. And, see, that was during the war that we got married. It, I can't even remember when the war started in 45, wasn't it?
Ended in 45, 46.
Oh, it ended in
45. It started like 39 or something.
37, yeah. 39, somewhere in there. Because I was in, went in the service pretty well at the beginning of the war. I was in Partridge Island, dreadful place, and spent a year or so out there and then a year on MISPEC. They had guns there on MISPEC. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, I knew the CO, the whole outfit. So I went to him one day and I said, will you let me out of this place if I get in the Air Force? And fortunately, he said yes, so I went in the Air Force. And
good chance to get off the island.
Yeah. So I went up to Moncton where nobody knew me and joined the Air Force up there. So.
Oh, yes.
So nobody could see it. I was afraid of Mike. The doc, I applied to go in the Air Force the day war started. My doctor was the one that was doing the exams, and he said, you had sinus trouble, get out.
Okay.
So that's how I got in the Army.
He wouldn't give you clearance to get in.
So that's why I went to Moncton, where nobody knew me. And of course, in those days, the Air Force was crying for people, so they'd take me and anybody else. Here comes a historian.
Now, we were just talking a little bit, Bev, about the family and when you were married and your children and so on.
The fire family.
Yeah.
Fire family.
They all grew up in a house of fires.
So you might be able to tell us what year that you and Jeff were married.
1941. Yeah.
And it was during the war.
Yes, that's right. And so after the war, you built your current residence?
Yeah, right after the war.
Here on Good Old Point Road.
Yeah.
88 Good Old Point Road, isn't it?
Yeah.
And started your family.
Well, we lived in St. John in an apartment for, what, a year, was it, Bev?
I lived there. You never lived there during the war.
No, but I mean after the war. We were in that apartment on King Street East for 6 months, wasn't it?
6 months, yeah.
Yeah, about 6 months.
That's just till you finished the house?
Well, it was till the spring came, and then we could start the house.
Right, yeah.
So I remember when I bought the lot, our accurate measurement was the caretaker for the people that owned the property was with me here. And he said, what do you want to buy? And I said, well, over to there and back to there. I said, I had no idea what I bought until we measured it, but that's what I bought, was over to there and over back to there. So,
yeah.
And it turned out to be 5,000 feet deep.
Well, that's...
Or 3,000 feet deep. Sorry.
That's the way it was done back in those days. So.
Yeah, 3,000, yeah. Over 3,000 feet deep. Yeah, compared to the lots you buy today, 150 by 150, whatever you get.
So you raised a family here?
Yep.
Well, one was born during the war.
Both Jeffrey and Susan were born during the war.
Two of them born during the war.
We came out here when the house wasn't finished and we lived.
Lived in an unfinished house.
Yeah.
An unfinished house.
Yeah. There was no stairs. There was no stairs to the upstairs.
Just open stairs. You know,
In those days there was regulations that said you were not allowed to build a two-story house. You could only live on one floor. That was wartime regulations.
Right? Yeah.
So we couldn't build the upstairs because of the wartime regulations, so we all lived downstairs.
Till after the war was over.
And the stairs were... Well, we put the stairs in originally, but they were just rough wood, not finished. So it was after the war we finished and everybody moved upstairs.
Put your upstairs in.
There's the date for the cars.
January 1924. 16th day of January 1924. So that's the authorization to get the loan for the fire truck.
Yeah.
Right on, okay.
You want to know what day we were married, wasn't it?
Oh, we got that. We were looking for, if we knew, maybe we won't find it, when Rossi first incorporated, weren't we? That's if there was anything in there that would give us the year that that Rossi was first incorporated as a village.
Well, I think it's something like in this one.
It would have been right around that same time.
Yeah.
Well, I thought it was incorporated village when it started back. It became Village of Rossi.
Yeah, it probably was a village, though, before they decided to buy the fire truck. Like,
oh.
Probably just before that.
Oh, yes, yes, it would have been before. What was the date of the fire truck?
It was authorized January 16th, 1924. They got authorization to get a loan to buy the fire truck.
The Bickle Fire.
Bickle Fire Truck. 24, we'll see. I was born in 16. And so I lived out here from, 1918 on?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what you had mentioned. It was from 1918 on.
Yeah, so we were here. The only fire truck we had in the old days was the city of St. John. And in fact, we had a fire before we owned the fire truck, and the city sent a fire truck in.
Okay, it says the village of Rossi was incorporated in 1921 with Mr. John E. Sayre as its first chairman. And it became a town in 1956. So, okay, yep, 1921 then that they incorporated the town, Rossi as a village.
Yeah.
All right, good. Okay, let's, what about some of your fondest memories of the area, Jeff? And you probably have lots of them.
The water.
Well, I suppose one of the best. I lived in St. John for a short time, you know, after the war. But going back to the beginning, I was always, till age two, I think, I lived in Rossi Park. So I was literally a resident of Rossi almost from the beginning. Yeah. So, because in 18, they built our present house. I was born in 16. So I've always lived as a resident of Rossi. So I'm a country person, in effect. And it wasn't until the war that I went to into the war, and then I got married during the war, and we lived in St. John for a short time until I bought this lot and we built this house. I couldn't live in St. John very long without.
I can understand that.
It was the sailing and the water and everything. That,
well, yeah, we literally lived all summer on the river in the boat, and in the summer. In the wintertime, of course, I had a nice boat, so we had the river to skate on, but the river was sort of our primary recreation, I suppose. And they had the Rossi Rink in those days, too. And they used to have baseball. It was like, it wasn't professional, but it was a local team. But it operated something like a semi-professional system, you know. Everybody belonged. Yeah. This is when I'm just a little fellow. Mm-hmm. So everybody would go to Rossi School. That's where the baseball games took place. And they had a little grandstand there. And everybody watched the famous games.
So you got to play some ball?
For the local. Yes. Yeah, I got to play, but not in those public ones.
Okay.
This would be the private ones.
Yeah.
And then I played ball there, and then, and some up in RCS. Mostly, we got into football. Football was the standard. Basketball and football were the two RCS had, basically.
Okay.
Were you not in track?
Yes, I was in track.
I thought you
were. Yeah, both places I was in track.
Yeah.
I was supposed to be a high-speed runner. 100-yard dash was my specialty. I was as thin as a rake, of course, then. Still not very thick yet. And so I was the fastest one on a 100-yard dash, both in Rossi Common and up in RCS.
That's why you joined the fire department.
No. It's like I run the opposite direction.
But anyway, some of your fonder memories out of the area would hinge around the river and a lot of the activities.
We literally in the summertime lived in the river, and I ice boated in the winter.
Yep.
So the river was our central point. I could see it from our house in Rossi, of course. Lived down at the wharf, and my father bought a boat for us when I was older, and so we lived on the boat a lot.
Mainly sailboating?
Sailboating. Well, ice boating in the winter.
Yes.
Sailboating in the summer.
Now, your ice boat, did you build your own ice boat?
Yes. Yeah, I built.
Describe an ice boat maybe for people who wouldn't understand what an ice boat would be.
I've built about four different ice boats.
As it would be good, though, to describe it for the people.
An ice boat. Well, basically, it was a cross runner plank with a sharp runner skate on either side. And in fact, my first ice boat had actual skates that a person would skate on their boots. In those days, the skates attached to the bottom of the boot with the screws. They weren't tubular things.
Okay.
They were just a metal thing. And there was the long reachers in the old days too, but I chalked those on blocks of wood, and that was my first skates. And eventually I found, looking around, better skates and better skates. I bought a beautiful pair of skates, which I still have, from a place in Millsville. They were heavy cast iron runners in solid oak wood, really beautiful skates. And they went on my bigger ice boat. So I was an ice boater in the winter and a sailboater in the summertime. Those were my two hobbies.
So the skates and the blades would be how it would slide along the ice, and then you would have a sail attached to it that the wind would gather?
A sailboat, in effect, and sail just like a sailboat, actually.
Would you like to see a picture?
Like a sailboat. And the difference was that you could do a very fast turns, whereas a sailboat took quite a while, to make a turn and go around.
Yes.
An ice boat could spin and go the other way.
Yeah. Now, what kind of speed would you, roughly, Jeff, would you get up to in the river?
You could get up to 40, 50 miles an hour in a good wind.
And
30
an ice
would
boat,
be a very common speed in an ice boat.
Ice boat would be more of a one-person operation?
Two, generally. One doing the steering and sailing, and the other one as a passenger.
Okay.
The first ice boat I had, there was a cockpit affair. Still got it. And you could sort of half laid down with a tiller, and somebody could lay down alongside it. Now, braver souls could also get out on the crossbank where the runners were.
Oh, yes.
And hang on the best they could with the stays.
Hang on for dear life, as
they
would say.
Yeah. They were fast. Yeah. There was a lot of fun to an ice boat. I still have all my skates and all that stuff still.
Now, would Bev get on the ice boat with you?
I think she might have gone once, but she wasn't an ice boater in the sense that...
No.
The one I had was quite comfortable. You could sit in a regular, it was built like a boat. It was quite comfortable with windshields. Get in the cockpit.
Yes, sir.
So
how big would it be, roughly?
Well, the comfortable one was about 16 feet long and had a 12-foot runner plank. The bigger one was longer, and that had about a 14-foot runner plank.
How big was the one that always reminded me of an airplane?
Yeah, that was, there's a picture of it there, I think.
There it is there.
Yeah, that's it there.
That's the second.
Okay.
That's the second one.
So it has all the resemblances, really, of a sailboat, except maybe a little bit smaller cockpit, where the other one's more open than the boat.
Yeah.
But this is open.
That's the big one.
Oh, okay, it is open then, yeah.
Yeah, that's open on the flat. That one was closed in two cockpits.
And they have three skis or skates, whichever you would refer to, blades, whatever.
One was the front steer, the other was a rear steer.
Okay, yeah.
That one you steered
and
on the tiller
your,
back.
Your sail, steer, which would catch the wind, and away you'd go.
Yeah, just like a sailboat, actually.
Yes, sir.
Our son Jeffrey has an Ottawa now.
Oh, does he?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
so there is still some ice boating...
Well, my son in Ottawa has an ice boat, and it's a class-type boat, something similar to that one there.
Yeah.
But the trouble is, with the type of weather we've been having, they've had poor success in getting, even here, we haven't had the type of weather. The weather's getting warmer, I think, and we're not getting the...
So we don't get
the ice that we used to get.
As good as we used to, that's for sure.
It's hard to get ice and wind at the same time.
No, we did quite a lot of ice boating. My first ice boat was one you laid down on like a sled and steered with a tiller affair. Mm-hmm. It's very similar to a sled. I built it in a cellar. And
so a little bit smaller than these.
Yes, just big enough for me to lay on.
Right on,
That's what Ted has. That's the one he got.
Yeah, well, he had one like it.
So in the summer months, you would spend your time on the river sailing.
Sailing, yeah.
And the winter months, you'd spend your time on the river sailing.
Well, sailing, yeah.
This one was colder.
Just one's colder than the other, yes.
Sailing snow. Yeah. But sailing in the summer, of course, was much reliable because you could sail all summer.
Yeah.
Didn't matter what the weather was. As long as you didn't mind a little getting wet.
Jeff would ask me to come out before we were married to go sailing in the ice boat. By the time you got the ice boat already, I was frozen.
She was frozen anyway.
Yeah, that's...
She didn't do much ice boating.
It would be a cold hobby, that's for sure.
It certainly was cold.
Yeah.
Especially out there in the river, the wind would be whistling, and to get the wind you need for the sail, well, then you got the wind that brings the cold with it.
The great benefit of sailing was once you had a boat of some sort, even if like the ice boats I built myself, but the sailboat was one of the ones I had most of my younger life was one... An old fishing boat that my father bought down the St. John coast there somewhere.
Okay.
And it literally was a fishing boat before he bought it. bought it up, and so they weren't. You didn't have to spend much money to sail.
Yeah, to have a lot of fun.
And have a lot of fun. Yeah. It kept you busy all summer.
Yeah.
And you could sleep on it. You know, go up for a week and up in the river.
Oh yes, I suppose. Yeah.
Weekend, whatnot. Yeah. It had bunks in it, and quite comfortable.
Okay. Maybe we'll switch gears here a little bit. We'll talk about in the older days when you shopped for groceries and clothing and so on. Did you do it locally, or did you have to go to St. John? What was available out here?
There was nothing. Well, there were
two stores
Merritt
out here.
Merritt store and Diggles.
Diggles and Merritt's were the two stores, but they were basically grocery stores.
Yeah, they were kind of like a general store.
General store. Well, you could buy a lantern and lamp oil and and things like that. You know, some hardware.
So did you?
Not clothing.
The Caldwell's, I think that's where your family, when you were young, that's where they got a lot of their stuff, Caldwell's.
Yeah, but that wasn't right at the beginning, though. Caldwell's were after I grew up some. They weren't there, Caldwell's weren't there when I was just a little fella.
But when Caldwell's came into existence, your family would have shopped there.
They had, well, they had more meat, they had more meat and whatnot than the people.
And they delivered.
And they delivered. But just the post office was in Merritt's store right at Rossi Corner. Eventually, they moved it to a little hut that became the post office just right alongside the store there, by the school grounds.
And over the store, Merritt's store, they had a lady lived there, Mrs. Flewelling, and she made puffs, eiderdown puffs. She sold all those.
Oh, yes.
And we had two stores in Rossi.
But Diggle was the one with the bowler hat.
Diggle had he was the Englishman, had the bowler hat. And that's where we got our first ice cream bars. That was a bar of ice cream covered with chocolate in a cardboard box.
Oh, yes.
And that was the first ice cream bars that there was. Arctic bar, Arctic Sun bars, they were called. They were made in Sussex, I think it was.
Now, during this time, there would have been electricity in Rossi. Yeah.
Well, I can tell you about that. The end of the line was right here.
Your house was included?
It was included, but it was hard when... When I came out,
it
was
wasn't much left by the time it got here.
To get things cooked properly.
Right. Lights were off, the lights were dim, the stove wouldn't cook very much.
So you were the end of the line, and you got what was left over.
And
you
used it all up before it got to us.
We compare the cooking down Riverside and up here, and they'd say it would take such and such a time. I said it takes twice as long to cook it here.
Yeah, there's another thing that should be noted, is that in the winter, you couldn't drive to St. John. They didn't plow, in my younger days, they didn't plow the road from Rossi to St. John. The only way you could get there was by horse and sleigh.
Okay.
And it wasn't until...
Your father went by train.
Well, the train, of course, was the way everybody went to work by train out of Hampton. Yeah. And they all went out to the station, went to their office, and came back by train.
Yes.
And our family, my grandfather had a garage in St. John, Queen Square. So my father's car would stay in there for the winter, and his handyman would crawl around and repair all the bits and pieces, paint everything underneath and all under the fenders and everything. So when we got the car back, it was all just like new again for the spring. So, but no cars went anywhere, because I can always remember the salesman would watch the streets very carefully from General Motors or whatever was in there, Creighton Motors. What was it called on that day? Anyway, the car salesman would watch the streets, and as soon as the roads were open, they were out trying to sell the cars. But there was no traffic except by horse and sleigh. And our yard was all plowed by horses, of course. The snow plows were all horse-driven. And the roads in those days were not paved past Rossi Corner. They were all dirt to Moncton. And the other way was all dirt to Fredericton from St. John, too.
But the road was paved to Rossi Corner.
Yes.
And there was a reason behind that, was there not?
Politics, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, there was somebody who politically lived in the area and was able to get the road paved so that the people could come to their...
Yeah.
Would that have been Pugsley?
Probably Pugsley's time, because he was the force in Rossi. I put the water system in, for instance.
Okay.
And from the Rossi Pond up here, reservoir down into Rossi. He was one that Pugsley was one of the
What time frame would we be talking about?
He was a senator.
That's who it was, the senator, yes. So it would have been Pugsley that had to do with the paving of the road. I remember reading an article about that one time.
Yeah.
So the water system, when it was started in Rossay, would have been, if you were looking at a time frame, would it have been in the 40s or the 50s? Or
no.
Earlier than that?
In our house, we were always on Rossay water. We never had a well.
You mean in town, you got the dirty water? I mean, Rossay, we got the dirty water from there.
It was a small pipe, a 2-inch, I think, pipe
from
the reservoir, two and a half maybe, down from the reservoir into the center of town. Then eventually they put a big 4-inch line in.
I remember the 4-inch line.
Yeah, we probably still have some places with it yet.
Yeah.
But it was a 2 or 2.5-inch pipe there originally.
So that would have been...
And down through Maiden Lane.
Okay.
So you followed the valley down from the reservoir down the brook lane there by Chatelon.
Yeah.
They came across one.
Okay.
That's where the water came from originally. Not down...
Dan Road.
Well, Dan Road in those days was a piece of country, unpaved, just a piece of country. If you lived out there, you lived in the country. There wasn't very many houses.
Could have changed from today. It's the center way of getting into the town today.
I remember driving the Model T up there one spring, and Carpenters had a house on fire, and the veranda was on fire. I just made her up with the Model T up through the mud on Grove Avenue going up the Carpenter's house and whatnot.
Yeah, so the roads, the non-paved roads, would have been rutty and muddy and miserable in the spring of the year until it started to dry out.
Yeah, they were so soft that you could barely get through them, actually. Yeah.
So they didn't
have trucks in those days.
The water system was in the town from very, very early. A low-key water system, but there was a water system.
2-inch, I think it was, or something like that.
A lot of us had wells.
Yeah. Now, we had a well here, of course, beginning because there was no water.
I didn't really get much of that stuff in.
So if we were going to talk about major changes in your lifetime here in Rossay, what would come to mind as being some of the major changes that you've seen happen?
Well, we have, expanded the roads considerably, paved all the roads where there were dirt roads before, expanded our water line. The original water line was a 2, I think it was, that fed our house. Might have been 2.5, but it was a small galvanized pipe. I can remember well when they put the big 4-inch main in down where the sidewalk is now. That was underneath the sidewalk. And those were the big days when they put a big water main, 4-inch, all the way from the reservoir, actually. So that was a big change. And snow plowing to St. John was a big change. See, in the wintertime, you couldn't go to St. John in the winter because there was no road to St. John. It was just local places plowed themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But there was no general plowing from St. John. So you might go to Kinghurst. And then there might not be any section for a while there because there wasn't many houses.
Right.
Renforth didn't have many houses in those days. So that there was sections. And of course, there was no plowing down above Rossay up Hampton Way at all, other than just locally. Horse-drawn, of course, those days. So that was one of the big things was when the car salesmen arrived in the spring to sell their cars. The roads were open at last, and the snow was almost gone.
That was when you knew the roads were open, when you started seeing the car salesmen.
The car salesmen arrived. And my grandfather placed in King Street in St. John, so our car stayed in there in the winter. And his handyman, he had to look after the house and all the grounds and whatnot, he overhauled the cars every winter, painted all underneath, put all new rings in the engines and did all kinds of things. So when you got the car back in the spring, it all smelt like brand new paint.
Ready to go for another
season. Those days, of course, it was an open car, just a retractable roof with side curtains on the side, which you took off on the fine days.
Mm-hmm.
4-cylinder. And open tappets. That was a strange thing that you never see today. No valve cover. So if you lifted the hood, you see the valve popping up and down.
Yeah.
Little 4-cylinder engine.
Yeah, that would... spray some oil around underneath there too.
My father had an oil can on the dashboard. Before we went anywhere, he'd squirt oil on these valves, tappets, That was the oiling system. Yep. There was no pressurized oiling system.
That's quite a change.
Yeah, that's quite a change. Yeah, the
vehicle. Open.
Yeah. Yeah, we used to go for a drive. My father was a great one of cars. He was the number two, I think, he got his license. Somebody else beat him to Fredericton. Forgotten who it was now. And he got license number two for the whole province.
Okay.
For a car license.
Yeah.
So, but he was actually same as number one. They both had cars, and the other one beat him to Fredericton to get their license.
There wouldn't be a lot of cars.
There wasn't any
just
cars.
A handful. Yep.
No, well, of course, there was no paved road to Fredericton. It was just a dirt road.
Right.
So, you didn't drive to Fredericton very much. You took the train.
The train was a big part of the community out here as well.
Oh, yes. Everybody that went to work pretty well from, well, say, the crowd at Hampton, there was a local train went and took everybody to work in the morning and brought them all back at 5 o'clock at night.
Right.
And that was standard practice to take. That's how most people got to work, was on the train.
So did that run every day, yes. Weekends included? Or would it maybe have had a different time schedule
different,
on the weekends?
Different on Sunday.
It would do Saturday because it used to be a six-day week.
Yeah, 6 day work week.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, everybody works Saturday.
Yeah. So the only difference
Sunday
might be Sunday, might
Sunday
be a little different schedule.
Day,
but
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
They might have had, I can't remember the train. I remember the train well on weekdays.
I can remember the car getting off down when I went to work in town, King Street.
Yeah.
Huge car coming down Dock Street.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the only way they got to work.
So if you use the train for your transportation back and forth to the city, it's quite feasible then that you would, if you were bringing home groceries or clothing, whatever, that's how you'd bring it home as well, would be on the train.
Oh, that was your only transportation certain times of the year.
And what about a bus service? Any idea when the bus service might have started over here?
There was an outfit out of Fredericton, out of Chipman, that was in the trucking business. And they were the first ones that I remember. What the hell was her name? It wasn't Drury, I don't know. Anyway, it was Uncle Otto Fredericton that was in the trucking business up there, and they decided to start up a bus run from St. John out to Rossay. It ran for a while, but they didn't have enough people. I don't think the most of them still went by train.
Train was still going.
Yes, so they gave it up then. And then after that, somebody from St. John end would get into the buses. But that was the first bus. It was an outfit out of Chipman. That
it was a good bus service. We got it, though.
Yeah.
During the war. Because I used to take the children and everybody and do our shopping in town.
That's the one that that ran from the city. That was still around even in the 50s when I was using it. So
yeah, a lot of people went to work that way by bus.
Yeah.
And
yeah, it ran out to Rossy Road and right to the old Point Road, so it went right by your door here, and it would have been very convenient.
Oh, it was very convenient, because I couldn't see it coming. I could miss it.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, you got to know all the bus drivers in those days. Then they were to let you off.
We talked about the river, I meant to ask you if you remember. For years and years, there used to be what they referred to as an ice road over to Long Island and also over to the peninsula side of the river.
You know, that was the only connection with the people. In fact, I got a book. I was quite surprised how many people lived on Long Island in those days.
Yeah.
In this book, the book is on Long Island.
Yeah.
And they had a winter road, which they put the trees in, you know, to cut a hole and put the trees in. That was so they wouldn't get lost in the snowstorm.
Yeah.
And also told them that the ice was safe. So that was the standard procedure. Of course, that was usually horse and sleigh in those days, not cars.
So
yeah, it was kind of interesting, though, if you could remember, the road into the park was lower than it is now, and in the spring it
go underwater.
It was underwater, and they had to roll.
Yeah, Rossy Park, you had to go by rowboat if you lived there.
Oh, yes, okay.
Because on both sides, the wharf side and this side, were underwater. In fact, my sister has a camp down there now, and the water used to come right up to the veranda, you know, literally 5 feet high, where her house is now.
Yeah.
I can remember getting in a rowboat, rowing right from all the way around in a rowboat around to her place to see how it was making out.
Yes.
And the back bedroom was lower. It was full of water. And the water was right up level with the front door.
So that was in the freshet of the year.
Those were
the
freshets of the year. Yeah. You don't get the freshets like that anymore now.
Well, it's probably a good thing to some degree.
Yeah, so.
Sort of like not having a ferry across Condola Point.
Well, they built the road up a lot in the Rossy Park now, too. Those days, the people always had to row their way out in the spring.
Yeah.
Every spring.
So the ice road to Long Island, though, wouldn't have been something you would have used or had an occasion to...
I ice boated a lot in the wintertime.
You could go across
good.
Later on with the boat with the cars. It was creepy, but it was...
Oh, yeah, cars go across on these.
Quite
these
a scary adventure.
Yes, and quite, yeah, quite a few people did it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, there was a standard road across there, but it, I never trusted the river for the weight of a car very much because of our saltwater tide that we get out of St. John.
I can remember, and again, I'm only taking you back to the 50s and 60s, but I can remember looking and you just see a stream of car lights coming across that ice road.
During a good ice day when the river was clear, it was just clear ice, there'd be dozens of cars out there whirling around doing loops.
On the river in general.
And I had a picture for years, I haven't got it now, of a car going under, breaking through the ice, followed by the name of McLean. He was in his pajamas on a Sunday, in his pajamas with slippers on. He had an open convertible car with the top down. Yeah. Here he's out in the middle of the river on Sunday.
Yeah.
And she goes down through the ice, and it went down very slowly, fortunately, so he got out.
Yeah.
But the nose went down first, and then it tipped and tipped, and then gone.
So, gone. Yeah,
so what they did was they got a hold of the fellow in the summertime, and he had a scow, and they fished the car out, and they took it over to the island, hauled it out on the shore, and put it on the scow, and brought it back to here, and they redid the car again here. All the pot metal was gone.
Yeah.
All the handles, door handle on it, that were melted off with the salt water.
Yeah.
But everything else, even the engine was still good. It was a Ford.
Imagine, yeah.
Ford, and they just cleaned the engine up, and that car ran again.
Isn't that something?
Yeah. Had to put all new pot metal on it.
I think there's a few of them on the riverbed.
But it was underwater all winter.
Yeah, there's been a few of them go down through.
I
remember a story one time of a pulp truck that tried to come across and then broke through. And
that was, I think he was over on the other side trying to bring the pulp back.
I believe so, yes. Yeah. So. Okay. I'll ask you just a few points of interest, and if you have any comments, feel free to... paddle boats on the Kennebecasis.
Paddle?
Paddle boats.
Half a boat.
The DJ Purdy was one that was beached, I think, at Condola Point for, that was later in life, but.
Yeah, DJ Purdy was a St. John River boat. It never was a Rossy boat. They beached it up here, but it didn't belong here.
Okay.
It was a St. John River boat that did all the wharves all the way up river in St. John River, right to Fredericton, I think, those days.
Were there the
Majestic was the only one that was a steel hull, so they could use her in the spring, and later in the fall when the ice was forming.
Mm-hmm.
The rest were all wooden hulls; they wouldn't stand the ice. The ice would chew the sides off.
They'd break up. Yeah.
But the Majestic ran quite late, quite early in the spring, quite late. And it was a good boat.
The Hampton boat didn't come up this. Cases, no?
The Hampton went to Hampton, yeah, that's how it got its name.
It was a paddle boat.
Yeah, paddle boat, but it used to stop at the little wharves all the way up to Hampton. And I can remember seeing it. I can't remember it running. I should, perhaps, but I remember seeing it at Hampton, and it was at the Hampton Wharf for quite a few years, parked there.
Oh, yes.
It was a paddle boat.
I saw it running.
You probably saw it running, didn't you?
So it was at one point common for the paddle wheelers to be on the Kennebecasis.
Yeah, it was a standard run that they had all the way up the Kennebecasis to Hampton. That's as far as they could go to Hampton because the water got too shallow above the bridge.
So were they more of a ferry for people, or were they used for bringing supplies?
Although, strangely enough, when I think of it, they actually built a riverboat in Norton. Now, they had to bring it down in the spring where there was a lot of water, because there's no water there in the summer.
There's not much water to get the gates up there.
They built one there and brought her down through.
Yeah.
What was the next question?
Well, I'm just curious as to whether they were mainly used for ferrying people or whether they actually brought supplies.
Oh, supplies too, yes. Yeah. Yes, I can remember being in the Oyster Mike. My cousins, the Milliers, had a summer place up in the Oyster Mike. And we used to go down to the wharf and watch the boat come in. There was a lot of, like, strawberries were shipped down.
Oh, yes.
All kinds of food supplies came back. hay was shipped down to Indiantown. Indiantown was the receiving point in those days for riverboats, not Millersville.
Okay.
It was Indiantown. And that was a regular commercial.
So would the same have happened on the Kennebecasis, Jeff, with the paddle wheelers? Would they have, docked at Long Island or on the peninsula or over the Rossi side and picked up supplies to go to St. John?
Well, in reading this book, there was a paddle wheel boat that stopped for the people, because there was quite a few. I was quite surprised in reading about Long Island how many people lived on Long Island. Quite a few did.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a center road ran the whole length of the island down the middle.
Oh, yes.
Down. So that's how they got back and forth.
Yes.
Horse and wagon and sleigh in those days. A lot of them did their connections with mainland on the other side, on the St. John Rivers, or the...
Over on the Kingston Peninsula?
No, well,
Long Reach and over there, you mean? That's...
Yeah, the Long Reach side.
Yeah.
They went over that way rather than coming this way, because they lived down on that end of the island. A lot of them went, instead of going to Renfort, they went across the other way.
Yeah.
But most people lived on this end, came back over to Fairvale. And then there was a winter road, both to Fairvale sometimes and down. I know, like I remember many years, the trees going all the way up towards Long Island where people lived. And I've got the book on Long Island. I was quite surprised how many people lived on Long Island.
It was a permanent residence.
They had schools for kids there and everything.
Yeah. The fire service in the valley, something that... If anybody in the valley knows a little bit about the history of the fire service, it would have to be you people. You are the history of the fire service as far as I'm concerned. But.
Well, remember it well. In those days, before we got a fire truck, St. John was the fire service. But of course, they only had a 50-gallon water tank on board, and that was it. So they didn't put it out with a 50-gallon water tank, they didn't put it out.
And in the wintertime, it was quite conceivable that you wouldn't be able to come with it anyway, so you had nothing.
There wouldn't be any road. Nothing in the wintertime. But the first fire truck, my father was mayor, and bought the first fire truck from Bickle Ice Cream Company. Bickle Fire Engine people. And the way they called it, Bickle I think it's Fire Engine, I think it was called. It was up in Woodstock, Ontario. Still is. And it was brought down in a freight car, Model T, same, something like the model we have now.
Yeah, this was in 1924.
Yeah. And it was brought into my grandfather's garage on Queen Square, and my grandfather's handyman drove it out to our house. And I remember it well when it landed in front of our house, brand new Model T, and we were just cool.
Quite an attraction, though, wouldn't it?
Oh, the fire thing, yeah. And I can always remember that they took it up to Fred Crosby's garage. We had no place to put it. And that night, our house was on fire, so we had the first fire truck, first day, and the first night. And I can always remember, it was a bit of snow. It was late in the fall, a skiff of snow on the ground. And I can always remember the next morning looking at the ground, and there was two holes in the snow where they had opened the valves, the drain valves on the tanks, so I knew they used two tanks.
Yeah.
And the fire started. In those days, my family had a cardboard box, which all the waste paper went into, and it was right alongside the furnace to start the furnace up and burn it and get rid of it. Something blew the door open on the fire, on the furnace, caught fire to the wooden the paper box, which in turn caught fire to the coal bin. The coal bin flames boiled the water in the pipes along the ceiling. The hammering of the boiling water woke us up. Sounded like somebody said it with a hammer. That's what woke us up. So
you're still using coal in those days as well?
Yes, coal and wood.
The coal combined would have made quite a little fire.
Oh, yes. That's
great stuff. So once you catch it on fire, it burns. So.
And fortunately, when my father built the house, they plastered the ceiling in the cellar. Now, it was just rough plastered over the lath, but that's what kept it from burning the house, because it didn't get through the plaster on the ceiling, which shows, well, you know how it works in a house with gyprock.
Yep.
So but the boiling of the water in the pipes sounded like somebody hitting the pipes with a hammer. That's what woke us up, and he called up Fred Crosby, who had the truck in his garage. He brought the Model T down.
I can just envision this now. Did Fred believe your father? I wonder what he called him.
I think there was some argument as to, you know, was it really on fire?
Yeah, right. you could envision that, I guess. A brand new truck just been parked there
just
that day.
And that night we're on fire. Yeah. And in the morning, we went right next door to the neighbors out of the house, so we could watch the truck and the hoses and everything from neighbors only 50 feet away. But Colin Mackay's house, Colin Sr. But the next day, I can always remember, there was two holes in the snow by our front door where they had drained the two tanks.
Yeah. After they melted the snow down.
Because there wasn't much water left in them when they finished. Yeah. There's just enough water to make two holes in the snow.
So your family home was, I can't remember the civic number down there now, but it was right across from the Netherwood School.
Yeah, right. My sister went to RCA, to Netherwood School. Class. She'd hear the bell ringing for the first class and walk across the road and be there on time, you know.
Yeah. So you, the boys would have went up the hill to RCS.
We went to RCS. Well, we went to public school up here first.
Okay.
To grade 5, I think it was, or somewhere in there, and then went to RCS for the last couple of years.
And you graduated from RCS?
Yeah. I graduated from RCS.
Okay, now the fire service, we were talking about that, and I guess I tend to get away sometimes, but so it started in 24 with this new fire truck, and you were only probably, what, 8 years old at the time, were there about?
16 and 8, yeah.
So it would have been a little bit later in life before you actually started dabbling in the fire business yourself.
Yes, I'm trying to think when I started in fire.
So back in 24, it would have been an all-volunteer department.
Yes.
Just a few of the residents around that were interested at the time.
RCS.
Yeah, it was all volunteer for a start with for a long time afterwards. So
probably
in fact, when I went, it was all volunteer.
Sometime in the 30s would have been probably when you were.
Just before the war, sometime, wasn't it? What year would it have been anyway?
Well, you got through the school in 34, but you were doing stuff, fire stuff then.
Probably safe to say that you got involved in the 30s. And
I thought the date was on this picture.
Which picture? Oh.
Well, the one up on the wall. Yeah, it might be. Mm-hmm. Viv, you were a St. John girl?
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Whereabouts in St. John did you grow up?
King Street East.
Right in King Street East, mm-hmm. Okay.
Central. Well, I did there in up Mount Pleasant area. We lived up Mount Pleasant area then. My father got sick, so we went to King Street East.
Okay, yeah.
But I always liked St. John. It seemed pretty good.
Well, especially in the early days, it's a lot more inconveniences out here then.
Oh, yeah.
I was trying to think why I got in the fire department.
You couldn't help it, your father was in it.
My father was mayor.
Yeah,
at the time.
So yeah, he would have been part of the fire department as well, even though he was mayor.
My father never went firefighting.
No.
Murray Fraser was one of the first fire chiefs. He was the chauffeur for Mrs. Taylor. And he was one of the first fire chiefs.
Ross. And Ross. Graham Ross's father.
That'd be during the war. Because Murray Fraser's the way Graham Ross, Mr. Ross was fire chief during the war. But I'm trying to think who the
Harrington.
Harrington. He might have been the first of the fire chiefs.
I think you might be right. I've never seen that somewhere. Well, we'll get into that on another trip when you and I go down memory lane with the fire service. I think we could spend a couple hours talking about that one, too.
Fire, yeah. Yeah, that's a big piece of my fire was a great part of my life for many years there.
Until
the war came,
yeah.
As a volunteer.
Put down for the incorporated as a village, 1921?
Yeah, it was January 16, 1921.
Yeah.
So yeah, you spent many years in the fire service here, Jeff, as a as a dedicated volunteer, and came on the permanent force, I guess, as the first full-time fire service personnel in Rossi in 1967, I believe that was.
But after the war.
Yeah, you've certainly been on for a great number of years before that as a volunteer.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, before the war. Volunteer before the war.
So you've seen a great, tremendous amount of changes in the fire service here in Rossi in your time.
Yeah, more like a city fire department now.
Certainly is different, that's for sure.
Yeah. People get paid now.
Well, that's right.
We never got had any money to pay. If we ever got a dollar, we spent it on the fire department in those days. That's completely different now. It's all professional.
You were involved, I think, in building the fire station on the Old Point Road.
Yeah. Excuse me. The first fire station that I was involved in was in the garage there, right across from the public school. one end of it was a garage for garage purposes. The other end was deep enough for two fire trucks. The open 30, was it 33 pumper?
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
And the chemical truck.
Yeah.
And that was just the original fire station. For the chemical truck was a little building that they found out in the country, a house. They brought the house in and put it on the edge of the school property there and took one end out of the house and put a big door in it. And that was the first fire station for the Model T. That's where the Model T stayed.
Now that was quite, that was in the same area as this other garage that you're talking about?
No.
Right there by the school?
Well, you mean the one we moved in next?
Yeah, the one you just mentioned about where they had the two bays and had the
garage. It was in the same grounds as the next real fire station. The first fire station was a house they found in the country, brought it down, tore the end out of it, put a door in it, and had it upstairs, and that became a barber shop.
But that was off of the Dollar Point Road.
And that was on the Hampton Road.
Or Hampton Road.
Yeah, yes. Right in the school grounds, right on the corner of the school grounds, next towards Merritt's store.
Yeah, between the store and the school.
Yeah, that's right. And that's where the first fire station was, just big enough for the Model T.
Okay.
No more. And it had one door, or no, two doors. Didn't go overhead, it was two doors. And the upstairs became the barber shop. Well, then we moved across the street to the end when we bought the pumper. 33 pumper, was it?
33, yeah.
Yeah. When we bought that pumper, we had to have more room, so we moved across the street to the service station right directly across the road from it.
So, which is where the last would have been a metro in there.
Yeah,
in
metro.
Okay.
In there. Well, one end of it was long enough, deep enough, to hold both trucks. So we had one door and glass, and that was one of the curses of the thing. It had glass windows all down one side on the sunny side.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what cracked the paint. On the pumper, and I had to get it refinished.
The ultraviolet rays.
The ultraviolet rays ruined the original finish on that on the pumper.
Yeah.
And because it was all done beautifully in gold leaf and whatnot, and I had to get it repainted. Then Crowney Frost came in and he put gold leaf, real gold, back on the designs on the.
Don't see that anymore today.
Yeah, the gold leaf came in. Little thin sheets, something similar to your cigarette papers.
Yes.
That's what it looked like.
Yes.
And about the same size. And he'd cut this in little strips and he'd glue it on all the way around.
They still use the same stuff today, but it's significant cost. Yeah. Oh, you can actually get the gold leaf.
Oh, can you?
In fact, the refurbish on the 24 is actual gold leaf.
Is that right?
Yeah, but
it's very expensive. There's over $1,000 worth of gold leaf.
With gold leaf.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Now today, fire department people use gold paint, usually. But that was the first fire station, the first fire truck. Well, then when they bought the 33 pumper? What was the name of the first pumper?
The 33 was the...
Pumper.
Yeah.
That's when they put hydrants in.
Okay.
See, before Rossi had about a 2 or 2.5 inch water main that fed all the water in Rossi came up through...
Carpenter's
Pond. that actually came through by Shadow Lawn. That's where, where the water came from, right across Taylor's property up the brook. And that's where the next one came to, the four. And so then they went, it was two or two and a half, became too small, and they put the 4-inch one, and that's when they put the hydrants in. And for the original hydrants were off a 4-inch main. And that's when they bought the pumper.
So that would have been like 33. Or, yeah, 33. Okay.
Mm-hmm. They bought the pumper to hook onto those hydrants. And of course, that was quite a thing to have a pumper. And when our house caught on fire, why, that's, we had the pumper to hook onto the...
So from there, we moved. We're into the two-bay fire hall where the garage was.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
And then they, after that, they...
Well, when we expanded to the truck we have now, you know, you still have it, 51.
Yes.
Yep. We moved back across the street again to the sheds all the kids were taken to school by horse-drawn vans.
Yes.
Well, they went to buses, so they built a garage on the end of the van shed, big enough for a bus, quite a bit higher. Mm-hmm. But the other one was low, you couldn't put a bus in it. But the fire station could go in because they had no tops on them. They were they were low anyway. So that's where the fire station went, was right across the road to the van sheds.
Back on the school property
back
again.
Back on the school property again. That's
between
where
the
we
school
were right
and
up
store,
until the war, till we built.
In 1956, actually, I think, when they built the one on the good old Point Road.
Yeah.
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 Okay. And then it was
51. It was 56, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was 56. It's engraved in the cement there in the front of the entrance to the.
Yeah, that's where we moved next. Because we used to look out the window in that old shed and say, God, I hope we get some better place than this. Yeah. It was so cold in the wintertime, and the tank trucks were getting so heavy, the floors were sagging.
Oh, yeah.
I said, we've got to do something about this. So I spotted a piece of land over there. Didn't have brains enough to buy both lots either, should have. But in those days, money was short. But Mickey Mackay lived on the station road, but he owned the land right up to the Hampton, to the Canola Point Road. Yeah. So he had two lots there, and so I bought one of them for $1,200, whatever it was. But I should have bought the two of them, because the church bought the other one, and I could have sold the church for double the price. And
or even kept it, because we could have used the property.
We could have used the property.
Fire service, that's for sure.
Yeah, so that's where our first land came from, Mickey Mackay, who owned the other side.
We must have forgot to tell about the ice.
The
way people got their ice, you remember that, in the
wintertime. Yeah. Oh,
yeah,
people didn't have...
Yeah, well, that's part of the...
Yeah. We'll get to that. We'll add that on here to make sure we talk about that. So anyway, that brings us up to, I guess, the current fire station and on the Point Road there.
We looked across at that lot, and Mickey Mackay owned it. And so I went to him one day and I said, you want to sell the lot? So I bought it, and that's where we built the fire station.
The date of it.
Okay, yeah.
So, but we should have bought both lots because the price was so low.
Yeah.
We sold
the
other one to the church for double the price. But anyway, that was quite a change from this old van shed, which was cold as a barn. There was no insulation, and all we had was an old... warm morning stove, you know, remember the old coal? We piled the coal in the top and it gradually fed.
Well, a hopper type system.
Self feeders?
Yep.
That was the heat for the whole fire station there, and it wasn't much. So you get pretty cold there in the winter. And I was afraid we were going to go down through and we got into the tank truck. I was afraid the tank truck was great down through the floor because she was sagging so bad.
Yeah, quite a bit more weight on it.
Yeah, so I said, we got to do something. So that's when we arranged with Mickey to buy his lot. Build the fire station.
If I'm not mistaken, I think you were mayor at the time that they built the fire station on the Old Point Road, 56.
Could be.
You did a term of office.
Did I? Yeah, probably.
As mayor?
Mm-hmm. Oh yes, I was mayor for a while there. Counselor for a while too, I think.
You were a counselor for a longer time than you were mayor. Your father was getting itchy. Much time.
Yeah, I could have bought that piece the church bought for the same price and sold them for double the price. But I thought I was lucky we'd get $1,200.
1955 to 58.
That's when he was mayor, from 1955 to 58. Well, and that's the fire station was built in 1956, so it was probably beneficial for the fire service that you happened to be fire chief and mayor at the same time. You got a new fire station.
Yeah, nobody else could think of it. And so the other thing, of course, as soon as they built the fire station, the town moved in.
Yes.
Everything moved in.
Yeah.
I built a fire station for the fire trucks. The town had no place for an office, so they immediately moved in, took over the whole front of it, of course. Then the works department had no garage, so they moved in with the snow plows and the trucks. So I lost all that whole
You thing. Ended up with a little bit of a
All garage. I ended up was just the bay on the far end. We didn't even have the end then, you see, to sit in. We sat in the furnace room.
I remember the furnace room.
Sat under the furnace.
Yeah, with that furnace over top, yeah.
Yeah, hung the furnace, and we sat on piles. We didn't have a chair, so we sat on piles of hose.
Yeah, well, I remember those days.
When the police, we eventually said, we got to get some room, so we put the piece on the end. And of course, then the police moved in.
Yeah, we lost part of that.
Every time we built something, somebody
else. Did they store something up over that room?
Hmm?
Do you store things up there, or was there a storage space?
It was a storage area up over the town hall section. You could store records and books and so on up in there. Yeah.
The furnace hung on the wall and ceiling.
1956, the fire station was built, but was Rossi not also incorporated as a town in 1956?
I've got to find it again.
It probably was.
Well, we had the village in 1921,
yeah.
But then I think it moved up its status to a town, and I believe in 1956, which happens to be the same year that the fire station was built.
Sounds like a good number.
And probably the reason why the town hall became part of the fire station and the works department and so on, because it was a town then.
Yeah, well, they had no place before that to hold a meeting. We used to hold it in Mrs. Steele, she was the secretary, in her kitchen or living room, or somebody's kitchen or living room.
Yeah.
And as soon as they built the fire station, by the town, of course, moved in immediately.
1956,
okay. Yeah. So that became the town hall, the fire station.
Works garage.
Works garage, yeah, because they moved in,
they
too.
They took up a big portion of it.
Yeah, they didn't have any place to go.
Yeah.
It wasn't until afterwards the police moved in, and we had to build that piece.
Yeah, we built 20 feet on the back there.
On the back for the police.
That was when Barry Miller was getting ill.
I had to thicken our walls up to slow the bullets down a bit. So that wall between us and the police was a layer of gyprock, a layer of three-quarter plywood, a layer, another layer of gyprock, and something else.
Because they're shooting the guns?
We were always afraid they would.
There's a story behind that. that's another. We'll another day on that one, Jeff. That's a whole story
on its own. Those were the days. Policemen did purposely try to keep us awake.
Oh,
anyway.
The jealousies that went on. You mentioned, and it just gets me back to something, barbershops. There was one over the first
fire station,
which was this house they brought in from the country.
Yeah.
Who was the barber? Do you remember? The last one I can remember, the earliest, was the gentleman with a limp, and his name was Murray
Howarth.
Howarth.
Yeah.
But I wondered if he was the first barber.
I think he was.
Well, look at me. I don't know that.
No, I don't remember either.
I remember
well when it went up there, but I can't remember who was the barber.
He had a barber shop up over top of the fire station and the van garage or the school garage there, because it was up top. You used to go up a long set of stairs to get to it from right off the Hampton Road.
Yeah, well, that was the original fire station.
Okay.
That little corner building where the barbershop was upstairs.
Yeah.
And the down part was the first fire truck's garage.
Okay.
Model D.
All right.
Then when we got the 33 pumper, we moved across the road.
Okay.
So then it became the works department garage.
Oh, okay. That's where they went then.
That's where they went.
Until 56 when they moved in with you with the new fire hook.
That's right.
Yeah. So Murray Howarth, quite possibly, might have been the first barber that we had there in Rossi, then, as far as an official barbershop
goes. He was one of the first one, I think, set up to do hair.
Because Odie Meyer also had one up, but he was up in Fairvale.
Yeah, no, he wasn't Rossi. No, Murray Howarth was the first barbershop that I remember, anyway, because it was over the top of that old fire station.
Now, Bev, you mentioned a few minutes ago about ice and block ice and... They cut ice out of the river for
no. No, that's salt.
Okay, salt.
That'll come out of the Rossi Reservoir, drinking water reservoir.
Okay, that's where they would cut the ice for block ice now.
They had big saws, big long saws, and they sawed it with saws into blocks. The ice would get quite thick. It would be at least 12, 14 or 16 inches thick.
Yeah.
And they'd saw it with these big saws, had these big tongs, and hauled out and loaded on the sleds.
Now, who would have been involved in this? Would that have been a commercial operation?
Well, I think the carpenter families all lived up that way. Scribners all lived up there. I think they were the ones that got into that business.
And would they go door-to-door selling this ice for people's ice boxes? And
I think people would come to them.
I think it was mostly people arranged with them to get...
Yeah.
People didn't have refrigerators. Mm. They had ice boxes.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to have some way to store ice. And ours was stored in one part of the garage. It was built with double wall with sawdust in between the walls for insulation.
Yes. Yeah.
And then when you put the ice in, you cover that ice with sawdust.
Okay.
And then you just pull the sawdust apart a bit and pull the hunk of ice out and then cover the...
So you could buy enough to do you for most of winter?
All summer. Yeah. All summer.
Okay.
Mm. You still had ice left at the end of the summer.
Yep. Isn't that interesting? Okay. Mm.
And of course you had ice chests. You didn't have... The ice refrigerators for you open the top and put the ice in the top, and that was where the ice was, and the food was stored below.
Yeah,
because cold air goes down.
Yeah, I can remember us having one home, but it wasn't in service when I was young.
Oh,
it was just sitting there as an ornament, I guess you would say.
But, ice chests.
Some of the businesses in Rossi at the time. Now we talked about the Diggle store.
Yeah,
was right there at Rossi Corner.
And Robertson store.
And you mentioned the one that was across from it was the Merritt store?
Robertson.
Robertson and then Merritt.
Okay, so...
Became Merritt afterwards. Robertson was
the first.
Yeah.
Merritt and Ham.
I remember when it was Ham, but so before that...
Robertson was the first.
It was Robertson first.
Yeah.
And then Merritt after that, and then it became the Ham store.
That's right. Yeah.
So the Robertson, though, would that have been any relation to the Robertsons that had the Manchester Robertson Allison?
Not that I know.
I don't think so either.
I don't think so.
Okay. But he was a...
And they ran the post office in there, too.
For one of the Robertsons was related to the Merritt, so, because she sang.
Yeah, because the Merritts took over afterwards.
Yeah.
And the post office was in that building. Eventually, they built a little separate building, just a bit of a thing that sat just on the edge of the school grounds. And it was, of course, being just the post office. But the original post office for out here was in Merritt's store.
Mm-hmm.
And,
I think those Merritts are from over across the
nation. There is quite a family of Merritts over
there. Yeah, there's a lot of Merritts.
Yeah.
That's probably where they came from originally.
So post office-wise, then, it would have been in the store, and then it was moved to a separate small building.
Yeah,
just
up Condola Point Road from it.
Okay. And from that
grounds.
Would have then gone to where the existing post office is today?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that was the change.
And the Diggle store was almost across the road from the Robertson or Merritt store, then?
Yeah, the building is still there.
That was Thompson before Mr. Diggle got it.
Okay, so it was Thompson's store?
To start with, yeah.
To start with, okay. And then became... I can remember when the Diggles were there.
In
fact, the ladies just lived up the road here from you.
She's one of the Diggles. Two of them are Diggles. Diggle girls. That's where we bought our first Arctic Sun bars. The reason I... quote
well,
on
that's
that is
the ice cream bar. That
ice cream bar.
Yes, right.
They were
I didn't catch that.
Arctic Sun bars is what they were called.
Yeah,
and
isn't that something?
In a little cardboard box.
Now, what would you have paid for those? Do you remember? Would they have been a nickel or a penny?
Probably
or?
A nickel. Yeah.
Yeah.
Came from Sussex, Arctic Sun bars, and they came in a little cardboard box, about like that.
I'm going to suggest you probably like those.
Oh, they were excellent. Yes.
one of your fond memories.
But you had 10 cents. Was a whole week's. A whole week's money,
ten cents
was it.
Yeah.
So
you were lucky. If you get one, you probably didn't get two of those ice cream bars.
Not in 1 week. Not in 1 week.
No.
Either, no.
Now the Kennedys, the Kennedy House, the Kennedy Garage, they had a big business over there in the corner.
Yeah.
Now that was a hotel and a service station.
Yeah, he ran the service station down back. It was more of a.
It started though as hard as a. Coach house
place. Oh, yeah. Originally, the hotel was a coach house because they had the horse-drawn coaches in those days. But it was always a hotel sort of a thing there, the main building.
Mm-hmm.
And then down below, of course, they had the horses there at first, regular horse barn. And then it became a garage. and repair garage, actually. I think Jimmy Renshaw worked down there one time in that building. But originally, the Kennedy House was before my time, actually. It was there as far as I can remember. Because it was, those days, everything moved by road, more or less, you know, inland and whatnot, and rail. So you were near the railway track and you were near a road, and all horse-drawn, of course.
So travelers could have come out from the city or wherever they'd be coming from, and that might be one of their stops. They'd stop there and could stay overnight, or they could get a meal, I would assume, and then they could board their horses, if that's the term they use for having their horses looked after, and take off fresh again in the morning, so to speak. And
it was a regular country hotel.
It was also one that I believe as well up in Quispam's sister at the Stonycroft. It was another one that would have been very similar to that. That was Robertson's as well.
Yeah.
Oh, another Robertson.
It was Robertson, was it? Robinson.
Oh, Robinson. You're right, it was Robinson.
Robinson
yes,
up there.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So the Kennedy, then, it did the transition from horse and buggy to motorized vehicles by turning the horse stables into a garage for repairs and they would have had the older style gas pumps probably back in those days. And
no, they never sold gas.
Oh, they didn't. Okay,
not that I
just
remember.
A repair garage.
Merritt's had the old one right across the road from them. The old hand pump was a glass thing
at the store right on the corner.
Right in the corner. Okay, there was two of them there. High test and low test, or one was might have been
called a regular and Ethel or something, wasn't it? They used to refer.
Might have been, or one of them might have been stove oil or something.
Oil
was one of the things I know they sold. But anyway, it was a hand pump thing, you know, with the glass so you could see. Yep. And when you put the hose on, you'd watch it go down by the numbers on the.
That would tell you how much you were putting in.
That was right on the right hand corner of the building, outdoors, of course. On the Hampton Road side, not the Dole Point side, and that's where you got your gas.
What about blacksmith shops? Do you remember there being blacksmith shops?
That was my favorite spot as a little fella. I used to drive him absolutely nuts. It was just up one property from the what do you call the road? It was down the beach, Rossi Beach Road. Rossi Beach Road, is it called?
Sandy Beach Road.
Sandy Beach Road, yeah. You know where Sandy Beach Road is, right opposite Chatillon?
Yeah, that's, I'm trying to think of the name, Tennis Court Road now.
Yeah,
that's
Tennis Court Road.
Down there.
Tennis
yes,
Court
yeah.
Road, yeah. Well, Tennis Courts go back a long ways too, but it was called Sandy Beach Road originally, and because that's where everybody went swimming. And one property there was a house, Liaison at my time. The next property down towards St. John Way was the blacksmith's, no, Colin Mackay's house. No, blacksmith's house. Blacksmith shop, and Kirsted ran the blacksmith shop. He lived in a little house down the lane, quite a bit down towards the tennis courts, almost as far as the tennis courts. But the blacksmith shop was one of my favorite limit of extension as a little fella. I could go as far as the.
Yeah.
There was no sidewalk, but there was a path, and where the sidewalk became eventually. And I used to drive him nuts because I'd take one of his shoes or something, put it in the fire. And I learned a lesson, the first lesson I've never forgotten. You can burn metal. Yeah. I never realized you could burn a piece of metal. Because I can remember I had a piece in there, and he took it out, and he says, look what you did to my shoe. You burnt that shoe.
Yeah.
I'll never forget it.
So you would have been preschool? Very small, and just as a young fellow,
And I've never forgotten it. Those were his words. You burnt that shoe on me.
Yeah.
And I never realized you could burn a piece of metal, and I did. I ruined the shoe.
Yeah.
I used to turn the crank, and I had a shoe in there, and I was turning the crank to beat hell, you see, and the flame underneath the shoe. And
who is the upstairs in your office, the picture of, that's the blacksmith?
Yeah, that's the
who
door.
Who is the man in?
Did you say his name was Kirsten?
Kirsten.
Is he Kirsten?
Yeah.
So that was the blacksmith shop of those days in Rossi.
And there used to be one, they tell us, in our property where all that rock is. That's what Walter Banks told us, but we can't find out any trace of it.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, and he looked too.
Yep, so there may have been a blacksmith shop right here on your property then.
It might have been, but we never.
Yeah, they always said there was a blacksmith shop somewhere here. But not this far back, I think. It was down towards the hill part of it.
It was over here in the woods.
Yeah, but not back this far.
Oh, no, it's over there in the woods.
Yeah, down the woods.
Rocks.
Yeah, down by the rocks there. I've never been able to find anything that looked like a blacksmith shop. But I spent a lot of time driving the blacksmith crazy because it was such a short distance for me to get to the blacksmith's shop.
And he would have been fairly busy back in those days.
Oh, yes.
I mean, everybody horses, still had horses.
A lot of horses in those days.
So would he would build the shoes and take them to the people to put on the horses, or would they bring the horses
to him?
Bring
the horses, too. Yeah.
So did he have a place there, like a stable to keep horses in, or...
Oh, yeah, it was a regular building.
He had quite a good-sized building there.
Oh, yeah, good-sized building, bring the horses in.
Would you like to see a picture of that?
Yeah, we got a picture of that.
Have you? Yeah. Well, and we might have to get pictures of your pictures to incorporate in our museum.
Well, I used to drive nuts because that was as far as I was allowed to walk away from the house was as far as the blacksmith shop. So I used to go in there quite a bit, and he would crank away, heat the shoes up, and then hammer them into shape to fit the horse's hoof because all the horse's hoofs were different.
Exactly.
And he'd have to. And then put the cleats in them.
So if your mom was looking for you and couldn't see you, she probably figured you're at the blacksmith shop.
The blacksmith shop, driving them absolutely nuts. And I'll never forget, because it's something I've always remembered. You can burn a piece of metal.
Yeah.
And I can remember him saying when I turned that crank, he says, "You burnt that shoe on me." And
let's see.
So you can burn a piece of metal if you heat it too long, too hot.
Interesting.
I was about six at the time.
School, we touched basically on your school, but you, as a school child, did you first went to the public school, which would be the school right there where we were talking about where the fire station was, because that was built in the teens, I believe, so that would have been there for you to go to school at.
I think it was built in 14, somewhere back
then. Yeah, somewhere in that area, yeah. So you would have spent your first, I think you said five school years
grade
there.
Five. I think I went to grade five and then grade six at RCS.
And then you went up to RCS and graduated from RCS.
RCS then was a wooden building, of course. It wasn't a brick building, it was a wooden building.
Now, back in those days of RCS, would there have been the North House and the South House?
Yes.
And then that was about it.
Yeah.
Maybe was the schoolhouse there?
Yes, it was a wooden building.
Right, it was a wooden building. It's not the same ones here now.
Just about where the one is now, but just slightly off to one side, so they had room enough to build the brick one while the other one was there.
So would you have stayed there for the entire day and had your lunch there, or did you go home for lunch?
And home for lunch.
You went home for lunch. Just down the hill anyway, a little short distance. Yeah.
Hall and Fairweather were the name of the North and South House, where the people originated with those houses.
Okay, yeah, but there's little houses up there now named after them. The Hall House,
that's
the Fairweather House, and so on. Okay,
I think I had given them that, but
I
can't remember anymore because I can't see anything.
J.S. Kirstard.
That's the blacksmith shop.
Yeah.
Yeah. She gave me that.
That is a fair-sized building. It's a good two-story building. Must have a lot of storage up overhead, I assume.
Yeah. In the peaks of the roof.
The gentleman in the picture then would have been Mr. Kirstard, probably?
No.
No?
Kirkpatrick.
Yeah.
Right next door. Kirkpatrick's lived right next door to the...
Up the...
what's her name?
Herb?
John.
John Kirkpatrick.
John Kirkpatrick
is one of the relatives. That would have been his grandfather or great-grandfather.
Okay, yep.
And this is the corner where it used to be.
That's
this picture before.
Yeah, that's the two stores.
And that's it's interesting that there'd be two stores side by side at Rossi Corner.
Yeah.
Yes.
You certainly knew when you were in Rossi.
This was over here was the candy house.
Yeah.
Down in the left, yes, that's correct.
In the corner.
Now, the Merritt or Robertson store here, now there's looks like a garage here, so that would have been
For horses.
For horses, yes, okay. Yeah.
Hmm. And over here is the house that the chiropractor.
Yes.
That's the oldest house in Rossack.
Oh, is that
really?
Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Examined that when they tried to do something with their chimney. And it was just.
Old bricks. It wasn't safe.
I know the house. Yeah.
Wasn't safe.
I didn't realize it was the oldest one in Rossack.
Wasn't safe.
Yeah. That's, I know which house you
no
mean.
No liner, of course.
Yeah.
Just old bricks and whatnot. Yeah, that's old man Kirsten there at the door of the. Not my old man Kirkpatrick lived next door.
Yeah.